and I was felt very, very sad. And, you know, I want to go in and paint it and put big plants and flowers and put funny movies on. I just felt so sad there, and I just didn't feel it was me. So that's when I went back. I went 3 times, and each time just thought, no, this isn't me.
Kia ora and welcome back to The C Word, the podcast for cancery people. I'm your host, Helen King. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify and come say hi on Facebook. Today's episode is brought to you by Julianne O'Brien from Intuitive Living. Julianne supported the Pledge Me campaign that I ran earlier in the year and pledged on the reward, which meant she could come on and be a guest on the show. Julianne created Intuitive Living following her own experience with triple negative breast cancer in 2014. Like many of us, she led a very busy life and rarely had time for herself. Her mother was diagnosed with the Lynch gene after she had ovarian cancer in her 50s and had 2 lots of bowel cancer. The Lynch gene mutation is usually associated with colorectal cancer, and Julianne had a genetic test which came back negative for that gene. So it was a shock when she had her routine mammogram and was recalled back because they'd found something. She went on to have tests which revealed that she had breast cancer and would need to have treatment.
So they said that they recommended a partial mastectomy. Mm. And so I was really, because I've worked in the medical field, I was really kind of, I'll get there, I'll do it. And I was very practical about how everything went, made sure that I was starting to change my lifestyle. Had my first operation in the August and no clear margins after that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do another one. And this is, I suppose, part of empowering myself. I went along with it then and had the second one, which was another partial. So, you know, and I was working full time, 3 children on my own with a big mortgage. And this was like, I could take some more time off. So my time off was working from home. I went into hospital, came back out and just kept working. My surgeon was away, so it was a month later before I've got my results. And I thought, great, I went in, you know, the positive, oh, yeah, I'm good. And he said, sorry, no clear margin still. You have to have an MRI, you have to have a biopsy, and you're going to have a mastectomy because we still haven't got clear margins. So after 2 operations, number 3 was on its way. And after that, they found invasive breast cancer. They actually didn't name it at that time. They didn't know what type of cancer, just it was invasive. And the surgeon told me that I could wait till after Christmas because it was so small. That was no-no for me. Mm. I just decided, yeah, I've got to get this out before Christmas. Just imagine going all over Christmas thinking this thing is growing inside you.
No.
Again, if I'd listened to my intuition, I would have really kind of forced this more. But I did have it on the 16th of December. And by then it had gone from, I think it was 3 millimetres, and it had grown to 18 millimetres. So
wow.
2 centimetres. So it was a very fast growing, and it was triple negative breast cancer, which has got that horrible connotation.
Yes.
So I call it my triple positive. I changed it from triple negative to triple positive because I just, you know, anything negative really kind of rubbed up against me.
Yes. Yeah. And I was thinking as you were talking, and I really relate to that, what you're talking about of everything you had going on. And I was thinking of how common it is, especially when I talk to women, how they talk about with breast cancer that, you have to keep being a mum.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you obviously had to keep everything afloat and, you know, working. all of that stuff that is, you know, that is putting so much pressure on your system. Mm-hmm. But how common it is for us to think, I have to keep going, I have to keep pushing, even when our bodies are saying you have to stop.
Yeah. And I mean, I picked the 16th of December, kind of wanted to get the operation done before Christmas so I could get my the stats off and be paid. So, you know, if I'd broken my leg, which I did when my little girl was only, one of my girls was two, yeah. I got ACC, I got housekeeping, everything. But when I had my mastectomy and my operations, I got 1 hour a week to help. 1 hour a week. And I think that's criminal. I really do. Because that puts people off having reconstruction, having more surgeries, because they don't get any help. I know there's the Cancer Society and things like that, but coming into your house and I got 1 hour, and she only turned up for 1 week. You wouldn't believe it. She never turned up again. She was meant to be there for 6 weeks, 1 hour a week. She came once and never turned up again.
Wow. I relate to that because when I went through chemo, it was a very heavy duty chemo. And so I tried to work because I really didn't want to have to deal with wins. Mm. And then it became very obvious that I wasn't going to be able to keep working. And I had to, I went to wins. But I went, I'm saying after my mastectomy, I went back after maybe a week or two after having surgery. I still had my drains in.
Drain, the pillow under here.
Yeah. And it was the same after all my treatment had ended. I was, the financial stuff was so challenging that I went back to work too soon and it was not good. very much.
Yeah. The drain, I had my drain in for ages. It wouldn't. Finish draining because even being at home, there was no one there to clean the house or do things. My daughters were amazing. I must admit, I had my 18-year-old daughter and my 16, and then I had my youngest who was only 10, 12, maybe 10, yeah. And it was just like full on, and they were trying to do their best. So I was so grateful to have my daughters. At the time, they were impressive.
People do really rally together. And I imagine, them watching their mum go through cancer is challenging. Mm. Did you, you had your mastectomy and did you go on to have chemotherapy or radio?
Well, yeah, because of Christmas holidays, it was the end of January, 24th of January, before they came back to me. So from the 16th to the 24th of January, 16th of December, I thought I was really good and everything, because they'd said they'd got it all, they hadn't had to take out, they just took my sentinel node. And then I went in for my appointment, very positive, feeling good, doing the green juices, doing all those things that I should for my body. And I got told, oh, sorry, you can't leave yet. You have to see the surgeon. And then he said you have to have chemo and you have to start as soon, you have to see the oncologist next week and start as soon as possible. And it was like, well, there's another, it was just every time I went in, I got these bad news. and then I met with the oncologist and he said to me I had to start the following week, and he gave me this big script of, I've still got a prescription of all the drugs I had to take. Counteract the chemo. And so I had started listening. I started reading the book Radical Remission, and I was listening to my gut, and my gut said, you need to sort this out yourself and see what you think. So I actually said to them at the time that I needed to go away. Mm. I went to Melbourne and I met up with Dr. Gawler, Ian Gawler from the Gawler Institute, and I took all my notes and I went and met her in Melbourne, and I was going over with my daughter who was going to move over there. And so when I went over there and spoke to her, I came out from her office and she never said this or that, but I came out and I decided that I wasn't going to have chemo. So it was a biggie. It was the biggest decision I had to make. But it actually, when it came, it came like that. Mm. So I decided that I would do heal without the conventional treatment, and I would look at what I could take, and I'd started doing blood tests to monitor myself.
How did the oncologist react to that?
Well, that was the interesting thing, that the original oncologist, I didn't see him again. I wouldn't have most probably been good reaction from him, but the lady I got it, the I'd seen her before I left Melbourne, and when I went back, she was lovely and a fantastic oncologist, I'm sure. But when I told her I wasn't going to have it, she said, oh, well, if it comes back, we won't be able to help you. And those were her exact words. And I sat there thinking, right, well, I'm definitely out of here now. I'm going home and I'm going to sort myself. But what she meant was that, you know, if it does come back, you know, with triple negative, the odds aren't great. So, you know, they can't really help you. And if I turn it down, and told me that she would take it. So I had to wear that one. And I had to wear criticism from people that were close to me that were saying, you know, you've got three daughters, you've got, you know, this. But I, my partner was amazing. And he said, you know, you've got to feel what's right for your body. So, yeah, so I still went through the hospital system for the last 5 years. I haven't heard from them. I was meant to have my last MRI this year, but I haven't heard from them. But I've been doing my own monitoring, and this is when I empowered myself to take control of what I was doing. To me, because I kind of felt, I'm not blaming myself for the cancer, but there was a lot going on in my life that I wasn't doing that wasn't helping my body.
Well, what was your intuition telling you about the chemo? I'm quite curious about what was going on. We thought, no.
It's funny, we talked about it last night. The girlfriend I've had staying here, she also, we met because we both had triple negative at the same time 6 years ago. So she's just been staying. And I said to her, I walked into the oncology ward, oncology department at Auckland Hospital, and I wanted to turn around and walk out. And I felt very, very sad.
Oh, yeah.
The place made me feel so sad. And, you know, I want to go in and paint it and put big plants and flowers and put funny movies on. I just felt so sad there, and I just didn't feel it was me. So that's when I went back. I went three times, and each time just thought, no, this isn't me. So it was a real, it was just something in there, that gut feeling.
Yeah.
So I listened to it. And I'm sure there were many times I should have listened to it before and I didn't. So it was pretty revealing.
It's quite an interesting observation, I think, because I had most of my treatment through private because I had health insurance, and I chose to go that way because I had more options for treatment with my insurance. And also I knew I needed to be kind of looked after, and that probably wouldn't happen to the degree in the public system. I don't think there's anything wrong with the public system. I think that we still get the same treatments and things, but it's, as you say, I know exactly what you mean of walking into that oncology unit, because I had my last, 13 rounds of Herceptin at Auckland Hospital and would see my oncologist there. And there, yeah, it's awful. You don't want to look at anyone there. It just has this heavy feeling. And I think, I was speaking with someone recently about this, that there is a lack of hope in there. And that hope is so important if you're going through something challenging. And it's really intriguing that is missing from from our medical system.
Well, it's actually a word that I found through running my workshops, and especially now Dr. Kelly Turner's done her book on radical hope, that people would say to me, oh, yeah, but we don't want to offer people false hope. There is no such thing as false hope. There is either hope or no. And I got this time and time again, and I found it really interesting that people could say that false hope thing. And we need hope. Everybody needs hope in what they're doing, and this year's proved how much hope we need. And I felt for everybody that has been going through cancer during this time, because more than ever, hope is needed out there for everyone.
And I think, and this is just my perception or my interpretation of it, is because I decided that I was going to listen to my oncologist and things. I felt like for me that was the best thing to do, was to sort of, because I had HER2 positive breast cancer, and I know that Herceptin is an amazing immunotherapy for that. So that's, you know, the process that I went through. But I think from, you know, from talking to lots of people who've had cancer, whether they, you know, are incurable or, you know, they've all the different levels, is that it's not giving someone false hope. It's giving them a, I don't know how to put it. It's almost like giving them a way of dealing with it that, that empowers them and lets them live a good life for however long that is.
Yes. Yeah, living. I think my friend Justine said, living your best life.
Yes.
So, you know, if we can live our best life, that's part of the step, that's part of the journey.
Yeah.
So important. And, I mean, I even went to Middlemore and to the clinic out there to meet my plastic surgeon, and a woman wasn't going to have reconstruction because, you know, she just thought, well, what's the point? She had children to look after. She had nothing. There was no hope in her voice. There was no one there saying to her, you can do this. This, you know, this would be so wonderful for you, and it's all covered and you could, you know, but she didn't. She was just really, and I think sometimes that's maybe why cancers come back. We don't have hope in our lives, or we don't feel empowered that, you know, sometimes ourselves, we can't change them. We can't get through that.
For anyone who has not come across Radical Remission, it is a book written by Kelly Turner. She has researched people who have gone into spontaneous remission and found it's 9.
Well, there's not 10. She actually has gone back and re-asked them because exercise kept coming up. So, yeah, she found these 10 key factors now that all of the people she interviewed used when they were going through their journey of and putting their becoming spontaneous remission. And these were all published in medical journals. So it's not something that she pulled out of the air. It was all documented in medical journals, which was, if you go into PubMed, you can put the spontaneous remission and they all start coming up. So she's got a lot more now. This is 15 years now, I think, she's been working on this.
Yeah, and so what are the 10 characteristics that she found?
Okay, so, and the 10 healing, she calls them the 10 healing factors, but it's not promising a cure or a healing. It was known to strengthen your immune system, but so people know that we're not saying there's some healing or cure that's going to happen. The first one, which is really powerful to me, and there is no order in these because you can read them at the chapters as you want and you can learn about it as you want. So having a strong reason for living. So I, you know, my strong reason for living that when I read that one was my 3 girls. That was my big tick, my 3 children and my family. But having a strong reason was I wasn't going to not be there for them, and I wanted to make sure I was there. So empowering yourself, once again, talk about that. She's changed the words to empowering yourself because it's about taking control of your health. And in her first book, it was about called Taking Control of Your Health. But it's empowering yourself to actually make decisions on your body, because you're the only person that knows your body as well as anyone. You know, you can listen to what everyone says, but you've got to listen to this body. Changing your diet. So the main key point on that one would be on every plate of food having at least 50% plant-based. So lots of different diets, but they all changed their diets. Herbs and supplements. Now, herbs and supplements, everybody has a look at all different types of herbs and supplements depending on your type of cancer when you talk to integrated therapists. But it is important with that herbs and supplements factor that you get advice from a practitioner. So that's the only one out of the all the 10 that you actually need to go and see somebody. Increasing positive emotions, that's a very good one for me. That's what I'd like to do at the oncology ward. I'd like to increase everyone's positive emotions. And then one of the big harder ones is releasing suppressed emotions. And sometimes you do need to talk to people about that, but it's a lot of people say, oh, look, I've had such a wonderful life and I don't know why this has happened to me. But sometimes it can be little things. It can be something that we've been brought up with. It just might be something, but some people, that is their number one, is releasing suppressed emotions. So that's good to follow through on. Following your intuition, that's me. I really listen to my intuition. Increasing your social support, making sure you've got a network, a tribe around you.
Yes.
And spiritual connection, which is really important, and you know, my mindfulness, and it's any type of connection out there with the spiritual feeling within you. Exercise and movement, that's number 10. And that that's it, from Tai Chi to, you know, doing HIIT training. Everyone did all types of exercise and movement, but Qigong, all of those are really, really good. Just starting small.
Yeah. And because I find it hard to concentrate, so I've been slowly listening to Radical Hope, which is another book by Kelly Turner. And I have been someone, especially in the years leading up to my diagnosis, who really, like, exercise to me had to be intense or exercise, you know, like that was my mindset. That was, you know, and then I was so wrecked by chemo that, you know, I'm still not, it's 2 years later and I'm really still not right. And it's really taken a long time to build it up little bit by little bit. But my point is that when I, she talks about the fact that these people weren't necessarily doing like really hard out exercise. They might take themselves for a half hour walk around the block and just enjoy being outside. And so I keep holding that at the moment because I think, yeah, just joyful movement. Go out and move your body and be, yeah, in the world. Like me, you don't have to go out and thrash your body.
Yes, and I have met people and they, you know, they're wanting to do marathons and that, which is fine if you really have it. But if your body's not healed inside, don't do that to your body because, you know, it can cause things to go haywire. And I think, you know, you've got to love your body. You've got to treat it and respect it. This is something very sacred to you. And if you go out there and think, right, I'm going to run that marathon because this is what I need to do, then, you know, sometimes we're fighting. We're fighting the cancer. We're in a war.
Yes.
And so by doing this exercise, we're kind of like, I'm going to beat it. So my big thing was yoga. When I had my mastectomy, as you know, you can't always do the downward dog's not a goodie with them. You must look up there.
No.
So I had these amazing tribe of people. They're my yoga tribe. And my yoga teacher at the time, Ingrid, was just sensational. In fact, I do online yoga with her. She's in Wellington. So I slowly got back into it, very gradually, but there was just so much love and caring. And from that grew this tribe of people that, you know, they've come up here to visit and they've been my social support. So exercise and movement, dancing is one of the best things to do. I do it here quite a lot. I put the music on and I just go out and I've got a rebounder. Rebounder's really good. So that would be one of my first recommendations. I bought a rebounder. There's a guy that sells them and he has the special, the ones that are, the wires are correct for doing the rebounding. But if you look up rebounding, it is just amazing for your body. It clears your lymph nodes. It's really good for draining. And so I would start with that if I was going to do anything. So that's what I did. I did the bouncing. Put music on, though. It's much more fun.
Yeah. There are two of these factors that I really wanted to talk about, because I think for a lot of people, when I say a lot of people, I find it difficult.
Which could be, yeah.
I'm asking for a friend. is the increasing positive emotions and releasing negative emotions. Mm-hmm. Because I know for myself, I find it very hard to release my emotions. So when you're working with people, what are the tips that you give, or what do you recommend for how do we release our negative emotions?
Okay, so there's so many different techniques that are good for you out there. One of the things that I took on, and I actually did a weekend workshop of it before I got my cancer, was tapping. And that is an amazing way of just clearing some of the energy inside of you. You just start doing this tapping, and it's, you know, something, you know, you start on here and then you go up. And I actually do it on my head because my acupuncturist, she always puts a needle in there. So it's tapping is a form, for those that don't know, it's a form of acupuncture that you can do on yourself. So you're tapping on points. Yes. And then while you do that, you think of the emotion that's coming up in you. Mm. And then you just keep repeating that emotion until you feel that it's released. Mm. So that's how I kind of do it, and I say things. So if I was really upset, or I was upset at my partner about something and I wanted to release that, that's what I would do. I would just think of the wording, I am. And then it slowly, as you do it, you can actually feel it draining from you. It's quite amazing. So that's quite a simple one. And you can actually do it for sleep, for pain. Meditation is amazing to me. I do a guided imagery where you take people on a journey, and then at the end of their journey, they actually can visualize what they want to see there, and bring that back and release it. When I had my health and yoga retreat the other day, we wrote down things and we burnt them. We did a fire ceremony and we put them in the fire. So there's lots of ways of releasing suppressed emotion. It's finding what that is and what it stirs up inside you. Mm. So that's what's good on the workshop. And usually what I found running workshops is that someone will start saying about theirs, and it's amazing what comes up. It's almost like that's the benefit of having a workshop, is that it starts bringing things up for people.
Yeah.
So when I read the book Radical Remission, to me, when you get given a diagnosis, whether it be cancer or a chronic illness, the fear is in you. You have this fear. So what I found by having the 10 healing factors, is it gave me a structure. And one of the things we do is a wellness wheel. And I did that years ago when I did some counselling training. And it gave me a guideline. So journaling and writing it down is so important. And so what I did was I put each of the factors down, and then I did the wellness wheel, and I had a look to see what areas I was lacking in. There were quite a few. And so then I could concentrate more, because we're going to have all of these 10 factors that we're not working on. Some people can be doing amazing diets and they say, well, it can't have been the food because I do all organic and everything, and they exercise. So then we've got to have a look at where we're lacking, and it can be something really, really small. And by putting these all together, I found it gave me a journey to go on. I, all of a sudden now, those things are part of my life every day. It's how I live every day. So it doesn't matter whether you're in Birkenhead, where I was in the city, or I'm here. I live that way because I know that I will keep myself in a good place, and I feel comfortable in what I do.
I think women are worse at doing that. I think we're not good at putting ourselves first. Okay, years ago, I worked in an insurance company, for a medical one, and yeah. It was always a little bit saddened when women would call up with, like, obviously quite uncomfortable issues that needed to be repaired. And you'd say, oh, well, how long have you been experiencing this? Oh, months or years, but I just haven't had the time. Thinking, oh, my God.
I know, and I think that's our health, you see. And I quite often hear it, people haven't had that check or they've had a pain and they haven't done anything about it. And we don't want to be at the doctors all the time, but it's so important to listen to your body and listen to what you're doing on a daily basis to find out where you're going. And once again, I go back to being present. Eckhart Tolle was I'm one of his big fans because I love listening to his voice. He's got a really strange sense of humour as well, which I like.
Yeah.
But, you know, just he explains so how simple it can be. And I think we just spend so much time complicating things. And it's finding the simple things in life. And we've all had to do it over COVID. We've all had to find the simplicity of staying at home, which how many of us loved? It was really magical, you know, spending time with my children 24 hours, 7 days a week. And I loved it, every moment of it. But yeah, they always picked me. I was on the PTA. I was running I was belonging to the Lions Club.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I got breast cancer, I joined Breast Cancer Network. And then I ended up being the chairperson of that. So I just had this big pick me. And then I would say yes. And that's one thing I learned with cancer is you have to learn to say no.
Mm-hmm.
You have to say it with no fear or guilt. You just say, no, I'm sorry. It's not me today. I'm not doing that anymore. The physical changes we go through. And, you know, I just met my partner. And when I had my mastectomy, I didn't expect him to hang around, actually. When I went and had my operation, he rang me that day after the operation and said, can I come up? And I said, oh, no. And a drain hanging out. So the next day he took the day off work and he came out and I made the nurse kind of put a blanket over and everything so it didn't look so horrible.
Yeah.
And he stayed for hours and I just remember thinking, how lucky am I? But he hasn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd had a peek under the, you know, there and looking at it and they brought me the mirror and I thought, oh, my goodness me. How am I going to have a relationship again? You know, things like that were really, that to me, I think, affects so many people and they lose the love of their body. Mm. And so the connotation of a mastectomy visualizes, and I'm a really visual person, so you kind of, when you say that word, you see this picture. Luckily we have people now that are quite happy to have photos and pictures taken and have made it out there in the public, but I think it's still one of those things people either react or they don't react to. But it's actually anywhere where we've had things removed from our body and then we've got these scars to go with it. There's not a lot done for that, and I think that's really important. There's not a lot of support out there for that, and that's part of the workshop is actually learning to love yourself again, learning to love that body and love who you are. And positive emotions, which you said, increasing positive emotions, that's part of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, just telling yourself. I read a book, I can't remember whose it was, and it was about standing in front of the mirror and saying, I love you, and telling your body that. And I think I did that for a while because I didn't believe Richard. I didn't believe that he actually did like my body. So, that's really opening, you know, opening up a whole thing about words and the mental image as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was quite funny with mine because I went through it. I tried to prepare myself by looking at pictures of women.
Oh, that's really bad. Don't do that.
I just needed to, you know, what's it going to look like? And then I couldn't, when I woke up from the operation and because I haven't had reconstruction, I couldn't look at it. I just couldn't. And then I remember this poor young nurse.
I
had to stand with me while I had my first shower and I just broke down because it's quite confronting when you see it yourself.
it's really confronting. And, you know, I just remember mine was a very jagged scar.
Yes.
I think a lot of them now are quite good, and people do. See, I didn't get reconstruction till the following August.
Yes.
So, but I had the expander put in.
Oh, yes.
But, of course, nothing at the time until it there. But just the scar was this jagged scar, and I just thought, oh, wow, this, you know, it does. It's you've lived in your body, and I've been, you know, in mine for so many years. And,
yeah.
And then to have that confront you. And but now, and that's for people that are going through this or just going through it, now, and I did have reconstruction, but I didn't have implants. I used my stomach, which
yes.
I was very happy to get rid of. I got the bonus of having a tummy tuck.
Yeah. Yes.
They took my pouch from my three children and new tummy button. And that was my reconstruction. And I was really proud of that I have a flat stomach now. So you've got to think of those positive things. Every negative, there's a positive, and you weigh them up. And then, having the tummy tuck was something I most probably would never have paid to do, but I got it part of my operation. So, But, nobody prepares you, even all those pictures, until you see your own body. You're not prepared for what?
Not at all.
It is at all.
No. Hey, it has been so cool to talk to you, hear your experience and find out more about, radical remission, but also how we can have a more hopeful outlook on life. I think that it's so important because, as you say, we often don't have hope when we are in the oncology unit. So to find places where we can learn how to do that is just so important.
No, I think so. And that's why today I'd love to give away, I've just got a new lot of books. So I have got one book to give away of Radical Hope. So I'm not quite sure how we're going to do this, whether people would like to email me and then I will draw a name out or contact me on my website. But we can put that up for them and then I can send someone one of these beautiful books that I just received last week. And going online and how you're doing it is fantastic, listening to it. Kelly does the whole book herself, so that's what's really special about listening to it online instead of having to sit there and read through the paper.
It's quite soothing.
Yeah.
Excellent. So, we'll chuck that link up. I highly recommend having a look at the book because you don't have to do it all at once. Even if you look at one or two things, you think, am I moving my body enough? Who are my support system? It's quite a nice almost inventory of, how am I doing this? Is this going well?
Yeah.
So definitely.
I always say baby steps, because that's how you get through it, if you do baby steps. And then if you need more information, please feel free to contact me on my website. And I haven't, I'm just about to put up my schedule for workshops, but my retreats, I am happy to hear from anybody if they wish to come up and have a 3 or 5 day retreat up here. It's certainly very healing for your body. But thank you for inviting me, Helen.
Thank you.
It's a real pleasure to be here today.
Before I wrap up, I want to take a moment to acknowledge the passing of one of my sister's close friends. We don't like to talk about death in the cancer community, but it is a reality for so many families. Javier Cabezas was 37 when he was diagnosed with a rare and aggressive form of metastatic prostate cancer in 2017, and he lived far beyond the prognosis he was given. He passed away last Friday, and he leaves his lovely wife Fern and two little boys, Leo and Alvaro. I never really know what to say in these situations because this type of loss is enormous and words feel inadequate. So Fern, Leo, Alvaro and all of Javier's friends and family, I'm thinking of you, and I am so sorry for your loss. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining me on another episode of The C Word. As with all episodes, all views expressed are our own and not meant to replace medical advice. If you're concerned about unusual symptoms, please see your doctor. The C Word is broadcast every week on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. Anytime at planetaudio.org.nz/thecword and across all major podcast platforms. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.
And if your man gives you trouble, just to move out on the double, and you don't let it trouble your brain, 'cause away goes trouble down the drain. Said away goes trouble down the drain. Thank you.
At least I did in my way. I way too faced. But in my heart, I understand. I made my move. And it was all about you. Now I feel so far removed. You are the one thing in my way. 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 You are the one thing in my way.
Something's happening. Sipping pro, yeah, that meth is pro. Promethazine, yeah, stepping stone. Oh, they acting up, get your weapons wrong. They only killing time, another second gone. I heard your man at home, now you melatonin. But you acting young, and you hella grown. She giving me love, but it fuck my energy up. Every time it's been every summer, only got the memories of us. And now we industry lovers, they making enemies of us. I mean, sometimes we in public, they drain this energy from us. Visit Italia, be my senior either. They be the or I be the, either way you need a visa. I ain't talking about MasterCards, debit cards, either. Credit charge, Kermit the Frog, margaritas. Yeah, I heard she got a man, homie. Yeah, yeah, you wanna lay the hands on me. Yeah. But he should see the way she dance on me. Yeah. Wishing I ain't had no pants on me.